I have started the recorder, and now I'm opening the Kindle, and we're at NTI Acts chapter 23, which for me really begins at the top of page 254. Where is it in the paper? Same, 254. All right, oh, here comes an encouraging first sentence. As you walk the path with me, things will not seem to get easier. You like that? This, of course, was based on where I was at the time this was received, you understand? Okay? As you walk the path with me, things will not seem to get easier. They may seem to get very, very tough. But there is a reason for this, and it is an important one. So I ask you to listen to me carefully now. You perceive yourself as separate. I have told you that you are not. If you are not separate from anything at all, then everything that is must be a part of you. This is the only way it can be true that you are not separate from anything at all. When you look at the world, you see cruelty. This cruelty you see as separate from you. Yet if you are honest, hold on. Let's see, when you look at the world, you see cruelty. This cruelty you see as separate from you. Yet if you are honest, you know that the cruelty lives in you as a wish. It is important to note that the cruelty is a wish. For a wish is not what you are. A wish is what you are not, but what you may pretend to be. Listen to me carefully. You are not at all who you think yourself to be. The world is not what you think it is. Everything you experience is the expression of a wish, but a wish is not what it is. In order to see beyond the wish that you made, you must take away the wish. This is why, as you walk this path with me, things may seem to get very tough. I am showing you the wish that you made, so you may choose to let go of the wish. And this is going to continue, but this came about a year or so before I met Laurent. And I really think that it was in my relationship with Laurent that what this was talking about happened. What began to happen when I was in my relationship with Laurent is I began to see the depth of my capability of hating. I had never seen that in myself before because the hate had always been surface level, easily explained away by what a jerk he was or what a bitch she was or whatever. And you know, when we project it out like that and explain it away, we don't actually experience it. And when I joined in my relationship with Laurent, we had made a commitment to each other, and we both fully meant that commitment, that the purpose of our relationship was to heal, and the purpose of everything that came in that relationship was to help us heal, that that was the only purpose. And so when the hate began to come up, I honestly was not capable of blaming him. Like, I had passed the point where I could say, well, it's because of him. He's a jerk. He shouldn't. I never did that in that relationship. You know, even though there were apparent, you know, the mind would try to say that there were reasons, but something beyond the mind in me knew that that wasn't true. I couldn't get away with it. Yeah. So I was beyond the ability to actually blame somebody else for my hate, right? And so it was very, very difficult for me. In fact, I experienced so much, what's the word for it? I guess pain, suffering with my own level of hate. To have that hate and not be able to project it, it was unbearable at some point. But it was the unbearable that brought me to my knees and that allowed me to ask in all sincerity for help. And when I asked for help, this is when that message that some people know called the code came. But the code was extremely helpful because what the code showed me was how I was wishing for the hate. It showed me, you know, when you think, or at least when I thought of a wish prior to this point, I thought of a wish as like, I wish I could hate. You know, and we don't go around, at least I don't go around doing that. I wish I could hate. You know, I wish I could be sick. I wish I could. But what the code showed me is that, it's not really like that. What happens is that a thought comes into the mind, and that if we give that thought our belief and our attention, it's because we want it. We want it. And so, you know, the story I always talk about is, you know, one of the reasons I seemed to hate Laurent was because he was not clean and neat, right? So a thought would come into the mind, you know, he's a slob. And if I pulled that in, he's a slob, it was because I wanted that thought. But what Holy Spirit taught me to do was to look beyond the actual thought at what was called the content of the thought. So notice that that thought, he's a slob, that's not just a benign thought, that's a hate thought. And that if I take that thought into my heart, right, it's because I want hate. That's how I wish for hate. You know, and if I'm believing fearful thoughts, I'm wishing for the experience of fear. And if I'm believing unworthiness thoughts, I'm wishing for the belief of unworthiness. So by believing the thoughts, I'm wishing for them. And so then the question became, you know, up until this point in my life, you know, the question probably would have been, it would have come from the ego, it would have been, you know, is he a slob or is he not a slob, right? And evidence is, he's a slob. I'm justified in hating him, right? That's the way it would have gone. But once the code came, the question changed. It wasn't, is he a slob or is he not a slob? It was, do I want hate or do I not want hate? Right? The question changed. And once the question changed, whether I took the thought into my heart or not, the criteria for that changed. So used to, you know, when I would have asked, is he a slob? Yes, boom, I pull that thought into my heart and I experience hate, right? Do I want hate or not? No. And the thought just moves on because I'm no longer wishing for it. But in order to stop the wishing, I had to become clear on what wishing looked like, right? And I had to learn that I was doing it. I was the one that was taking those thoughts into my heart, right? Nobody else was doing it to me. So I learned what wishing looks like. But that's why when he says here it's going to get tough, and I don't know if this is a message for everyone, this was written to me, it did get very, very tough because I experienced that extreme hate before I came to my knees and asked for help. Because the ability to fully project had already gone away. It had died. And so when you stop projecting and yet you're still wishing, it like builds up in you in a way that becomes unbearable. Right? Because the projecting was keeping you out of pain to some point. Being able to blame someone else relieves you of that full burden of suffering. And when you're unable to blame someone else, then you experience the full burden of suffering until you learn what's causing the suffering. So, verses 12 to 22. The wish you made, you have denied, and you do not want to claim it. You see your wish as a terrible sin, and you fear more than anything to face it. But it is important for you to know that if you do not face it and let it go, the wish continues to be wished. It is a wish that you have made, and it has all the power you have given it. As such, the wish continues until you face the wish and choose not to wish it anymore. Now here, now when I talked about my hate experience, that was not at the level of the root. That was more at the level of a branch. Like if we're looking at a tree, if I forgive someone for saying something to me, like if Danielle forgives me for snapping at her, right? But she doesn't do any deeper work, that's like taking a leaf off of a branch. And there's still a million other leaves, and plus leaves can grow back, and you never get free that way, right? But if you realize, for example, how you make the experience of hate, and you learn not to want hate, and you learn not to accept any hate thought, that's like cutting a branch off of the tree. Hate never comes back. You may still have the belief in rejection and the belief in unworthiness. You have other branches, but you're done with hate if you really learn that, okay? However, there's still other branches and other things that you can experience. What he's talking about now is chopping the tree down.
Beautiful.
And the primal wish, as we know, would be, as NTI Romans is going to teach us when we get into Romans, which is coming up soon, the primal wish would be the wish that things were different than they are, or the wish for an experience other than truth. And that would be the birth for us of the individual perception, right? Or the birth of the ego, the wish for something different than just pure awareness, you could say, just isness. And if you look at the whole world is the perfect reflection of that wish. The whole world appears to be something other than pure isness, right? But that's what he's saying. Until we face our wish and we take it back, we stop wanting to be an individual, we stop wanting to be a person, we stop wanting to have a self-will, all the different ways that you express that, as long as we keep wishing it, the tree's still there. And so you're still going to experience, you may cut off a few branches, but you're still going to experience something. The only way to get back to the experience of pure self is to cut down the tree. Okay, so starting with sentence 6. Because you fear your wish, there is something you will unconsciously do. Without realizing that you are doing it, you will give all that you have to avoid facing your wish. You will struggle more than you know to keep yourself in denial. But to stay in denial is to keep the wish. Denial is not what you want. And one thing that is helpful, if you can really do it without judgment and do it without thinking it's them and not me, right? One thing that is very helpful is to observe other people when you can see how they are in denial. It's very difficult to look at yourself and to see how you're in denial. But if you can then see it in someone else, then you can take it back and start questioning yourself, right? So if you think of all of the other people around you as a mirror of what you are at least capable of, how you are capable of denying, then when you notice a type of a denial, you can take it back and look at yourself. It's almost impossible to see it in yourself without the reflection of others. So don't be afraid to see other people's forms of denial. Just don't fall for the mistake, it's her and not me, or it's him and not me, right? But you need that. I don't know how else you would see how you're denying, you know? And so there are tons of ways that we can deny, and we can all, you know, see some of them already by looking at others. But then the question is, do I do that? And you know, at least in my practice, I found lots of ways that I was denying, lots of ways I was about to slip, by noticing it in someone else first and then coming back and looking at me. Yeah, it's helpful. It's your mirror. The world is your mirror. Verses 23 to 35. Denial is delay. Avoidance is delay. I love this next sentence. Even peace and happiness in a world of fear is delay in giving up your wish. We can get ourselves in a place of comfort where we're comfortable with our little world, right? But there's still a fearful world outside of our little world, you know? And so he's saying, you know, even being perfectly happy in your little world, you know, that's not the answer, right? Peace and comfort in a fearful world is still not it. Be not fooled by yourself. You want very much to be healed. You must face that which makes you sick. Accept it is given by your own wish and choose not to be sick anymore. So that's Acts 23. We'll probably move on to Acts 24 because it's very short. But does anybody have anything they want to comment on about 23 before we go? No? Okay, so let's just move on then. NTI Acts chapter 24. Oh, I love this one. I love this one. Do not be afraid to face your accusers. Do not be afraid of pain. Look forward to the opportunity to see what you have wished, knowing what is wished is not true. So, one of the best ways that we avoid healing is avoidance. I mean, I don't know how else to say that. We avoid healing by avoidance. So, you know, if we know, for example, that, you know, something like next time I see Dave, I know he's going to say something to me. I just know it, and I don't want to hear that. So I start trying to avoid Dave. Because as long as I can avoid Dave, I don't have to face what he's going to say to me. What Spirit is saying is, do not be afraid to face what he's going to say to you, because this is how you're going to heal. And the way this worked out for me, again, it came in my life later. It came in my life after NTI was published. But once NTI was published, one of the first responses to NTI in the Course of Miracles world was very strong criticism. Because, although it's not really true, because Brent Haskell had published a book and you know, different ones had published books. I wasn't the first. Maybe it was because mine was on the New Testament. I don't know what it was. But people acted like Helen was the only legitimate scribe, and who is this person showing up, hearing a Holy Spirit? And there was very, very strong criticism. And what I was guided to do was to read every bit of it. You know, it was all in writing on a group. But instead of, you know, no, I don't want to see that. No, I don't want to see that. That, you know, to read every bit of it, to look at all of my feelings of, you know, that's unfair, you know, they don't know me, they're making that up, you know, and just to watch the whole thing. And what happened over a period of, you know, it seems like it was around 6 months for me, the way I remember it now, what happened eventually was it just got to where there was no charge anymore in the reading it. I mean, it didn't matter to me that people had an opinion about me and about NTI, and you know, it just ceased to be meaningful, and I was able to kind of go on. And then as I was able to kind of go on, you know, it kind of, you know, it just kind of faded away. It kind of stopped. Like, as far as I know, there's not a lot of that out there anymore. I don't know if there is, but I'm not aware of it. If so, it's outside of my awareness. So, but if I had been afraid to look at it, if I had been afraid to read the emails, if I had quit the peace of God so I didn't have to look at it, right? Avoidance, the healing wouldn't have happened. It was by being willing to look at it and look at it without defensiveness. Like, another thing that would have been an error is if I had been in there writing emails right back to every one of, you're wrong, I'm, you know, you're, you know, that wouldn't have worked either. It had to be just watching the show. So, like, if it was, you know, me and Dave, if Dave was upset with me as something, then the healthiest thing to do for healing would be to show up, let Dave say his thing without defending myself, and just let it happen. You know, just let it happen. And somehow by, it really is just kind of watching the show, even though at that early point it feels personal. But what you're really doing is you're just watching the show. And as you get better and better at just watching the show, things just begin to heal. And then what also starts to happen at some point is when you start listening to someone who, you know, appears to be an attacker, first of all, it gets to the point where you don't see them as an attacker. If you were telling somebody else's story, you may have to tell it that way to paint the picture. You know, he attacked me, right? But that's not truly how you see. But also, there's something in you that begins to tune into what's he really trying to say. Because when he's attacking you, that's not what he's really trying to say. You know, it never is what he's really trying to say. And so you start tuning into what is it that he's really trying to say? What is it that he's really communicating? And you start learning to listen at a level that is not personally affected by the apparent attack, and also knows that there's something else underneath it, and it just becomes much different. And then you're able to communicate back to the person at that point because you're no longer defending. You're at a very different level. And you're able to really communicate with people and talk to people because the personal defense mechanism is out of the way. But again, you only get there by not avoiding, by not hiding.
I know for me, this is recognition came upon me that it's not, I'm never afraid of anybody else. I'm never afraid of any situation. I'm always afraid of this personal, yes, self's capability of handling whatever seems to happen on outside of me. You know, it's not you, 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 or you. It's always fear of my capability of handling.
Yeah.
In a stable manner, that's just not,
should we tell
okay.
Should we tell him my funny story about today, the dog? Oh, it's not, well, it's only funny if you have a sick sense of humor. Okay, good.
For those not just listening, all raised hands.
Yeah. When we first start, Jamie has a boyfriend, very legitimately, my dog has a boyfriend, and he happened to come today when we started doing our 11-mile walk, and they're so excited to see each other, they really like each other, and so he decided to come with us. And he starts walking with us, and I keep hoping he's going to turn around and go home, but he doesn't, and we're getting further and further from home. And, you know, I didn't want anything to happen to him, so I ended up scaring him away. I got kind of mean for saying, go home, and, you know, and he went home, and I was really happy about that, because he, you know, that's what should have happened. And so we kept on walking, and I made a comment to Danielle. I said, you know, I really didn't want to see a dog get hit by a car today. And the thought that was underneath that was actually a fear thought. I was afraid that if I saw a dog get hit by a car right in front of me, that I wouldn't be able to handle that in peace. I was afraid. So it wasn't just love that sent the dog home. There was fear there. I didn't want to see him get hurt because I was afraid of my reaction to him getting hurt. About 10 minutes later, this dog, at first it appeared, I'll tell you the rest of the story in a minute, but this dog got hit by a car right in front of us. Right in front of us. Another dog. Another dog came out of nowhere, and we see this dog getting hit by a car right in front of us. But what was interesting was I observed my reaction. There was none of the fear or panic that I feared. None of the not being able to handle it was there. I immediately, like, zoomed in on the dog, you know, with my eyes, because the dog was still a little distance away, zoomed in on the dog and started assessing how badly is this dog hurt. And I immediately noticed that his leg was hurt, but that actually it didn't look like any internal organs were hurt or anything, and the dog started coming towards us. And then the next thing I started thinking was, okay, well, this dog is only hurt a little bit, but this dog needs help. We need to find this dog's owner. And the next thing I started doing was looking at which direction did the dog come from, what house is most likely its house. I mean, everything was very practical. So I actually learned from myself that I reacted much better than I imagined I would. So it was kind of interesting that, like, the fear thought was my imagination of how I would respond to that event. When the event actually occurred, there was a very calm, very cool, practical person responding. But as it turns out, the dog came from the truck that appeared to hit it. Because as the truck went on down the road a little bit, he noticed his dog was gone, and he stopped, and he looked, and he saw us with his dog. The dog had jumped out of the truck to come and say hi to Jamie.
Oh.
And so I don't know if the truck actually hit it, because, you know, my mind thought that I saw a truck hit. I mean, it hit the ground and at least fell and hurt itself. I don't know if the truck actually ran over it after that or not, because now I'm not real sure about what I saw. You know, it happened really, really quick. But it was interesting because what you said is true. What I really feared, I didn't really fear a dog getting hit by a car. I feared how I would be able to handle it if I saw a dog get hit by a car. I feared who I would be, you know, and what my experience would be. That's what I feared. Yeah.
When you were talking, it reminded me of that post on Facebook, the work of Byron Katie.
Oh, yeah, what's
that? That I read earlier. It says, it's not the darkness that people fear, it's what they imagine into the darkness.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's really helpful, I think, to let go of that imagining, you know, because I was imagining that I would be all upset and some kind of an emotional wreck if I saw a dog get hit. Yeah. And that's what scared me.
Right. Yeah. And for me, stuff like that, it's really helpful to really isolate, like, what's going on here? You know, am I afraid of this person? No, I'm not afraid of this person. I'm afraid of
my reaction. This person.
Right, this person's reactions and inadequacy in meeting the situation,
yeah,
or whatever.
And inadequacy is the key word there.
Yeah.
Again, we're afraid of our own inadequacy.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, so moving on then. So do not be afraid, is what it says, to face all of these things. Do not be afraid to face your pain. Do not be afraid to face your accusers. All right, starting with sentence 4. The end of wishing is the end of illusions. Face your wish and then take it back. This is the great release that you face. This is your path to freedom. So face your wish and take it back. Again, when I was facing my accusers, there was the wish to defend, the wish to be seen the way I wanted to be seen. You know, but again, I just watched and I just read and I did nothing. You know, and by watching and reading and doing nothing, in a way, I'm taking back my wish.
Exactly.
If I had got on the keyboard and started firing emails at them, I'd been keeping my wish.
Right. So taking it back is actually very passive.
Very passive.
Yeah.
Just being able to watch it.
Right.
You know, so I watched what they were writing. I watched my emotions about it. You just watch the movie.
Right.
And by watching it and not acting on it, not believing it, not reacting with it, you take it back. But when you believe, like if I had the thought, I mean, I did have the thought, you know, that they were ruining NTI's reputation before it even got started, right? And so, but if I had believed that, and I had also believed it was my job to save NTI's reputation, and I had started firing emails back at them, I would have been keeping my wish. Right?
Yeah.
Keeping my wish. But by doing nothing and just facing it and just watching it, the wish dies. So we're still talking about the observer role in different words is what's going on here. Yeah. Okay, verses 10 to 21. Know that when you face your wish, it may not at all seem easy. This is because the root of belief makes your wish real to you. When you face that which you fear, there is one thing you must remember. What you look on is not at all real, and you face it to deny it. Now here the word deny, of course, is being used differently, right? What you're really doing is denying its ability to affect you.
And again, that's just looking at it.
That's just looking at it.
Right.
Because if I'm defending by typing the emails, I'm believing it does affect me, right? But if I'm doing nothing, even though it may not be a completely conscious thing yet, when I'm first beginning, right? When I'm beginning, there's something in me that's knowing this does not affect me. That's why I have my hands off the keyboard, right? Otherwise, I would be defending. And I remember Jesus being a really strong symbol for me during this period of time. Remember how in Jesus' last 24 hours when he went before the Sanhedrin, they questioned him and they accused him and he stood silent? He was a very strong symbol for me. You know, I stood silent like him. You know, and I stood silent because I did not want to be involved with the illusion. I wanted to just stand silent and let it kind of die on its own. Yeah. When you deny what seems real, again, denying that it affects you, you are only being truthful, for it has no reality at all. Grab onto me as your courage. Hold tight to your faith and trust that your belief is wrong. Right? Know that you will not face your wish fully until you are fully ready to see. Remember your freedom. Nothing can be given you that you are not willing to receive. Until you are ready, your wish will remain hidden. It will be in sight, but you will choose not to see it. And I will be with you, strengthening you according to your willingness, walking towards the wish that you do want to see. Laurent used to say, projection is protection, right? And that's a true statement. And I remember when my ability to project started to die, so that again, I wasn't able to really blame like I used to, and the full force of the emotions first started coming up, I remember being grateful that other people that weren't ready for this could project. Like I didn't see projection as a bad thing. I was grateful that people who weren't ready to see their self-hatred, weren't ready to see all of that, were able to project it out and have a gentler experience. You know, like, well, I didn't wish it on anybody that wasn't ready for it. Yeah, and I was happy that they could be. And again, what got me through it, Dave, was like what we were talking about before I turned the recorder on, but what got me through it was wanting so much to heal, to know thyself, to know the truth. And you know, not everybody has that in them full enough. And if that's not in you full enough, well then bless you on your projection. You know, it's much better for you to have that gentle projection protection than to have to deal with this before you're fully ready. You know, I thought that if I didn't know what was going on, because I did, I knew what was going on, and I knew what my purpose was, but I remember thinking if I didn't know what was going on and didn't know what my purpose was, this might drive me crazy, or drive me into depression, or, you know, like, the extremeness of it would not have been healthy if I didn't know exactly what was going on. Some people it might drive to suicide, right? So, bless the ability to project and blame for those who are not ready to heal. It's true. And that takes away the judgment of projection.
I was just thinking of Fox News, that's all.
What were you thinking of Fox News?
Well, that's, you know.
I don't watch Fox News.
Not me either, really.
Oh, I've heard people talk about them a little bit. Are they really vicious in attacking?
Well, yeah, they do a lot of projecting.
A lot of projecting. They blame people for things? Yeah.
Only Democrats.
Attack.
Oh, they blame Democrats? So they're a Republican station? Interesting.
Conservative.
Yeah. Yeah, conservative. Yeah, I've never seen Fox News, so. But I have heard comments every now and then, so I knew something was going on there. All right, so we need to look for an assignment. Again, we always try to look for an assignment that is doable. You know, we don't have to wait for someone to attack you this week, you know, so we don't need to say face your attacker, because maybe you won't get attacked this week, right? So that's not a good assignment.
I'm coming in here all bandaged.
For you.
What were you going to say, Priscilla?
How about something similar to last week, but only a little stronger, a little...
So, a little more about the observer. Okay, well, we talked about the wish. Maybe in addition to being the observer to your emotions and you know, all of that, maybe what you start to notice is what you are choosing to believe, if you can learn to observe that. That's a little tougher observing exercise, actually. But notice that you just chose to believe my partner here is annoying as hell. Or you just chose to believe this experience of losing weight is frightening. And notice, you know, again, from an observer role, notice, look what I am still taking into my heart. I'm wishing for this.
Yeah, if you're experiencing it, you're wishing it.
You're wishing it.
Yeah.
So can you do that? That's a little tougher observer, you know, because the only way you can do that is if you can do it without judgment. If you're going to judge yourself for being, you know, the stupid idiot that believed that again, or whatever, or the guilty idiot that believed that again, it's not going to work. So it really is a stronger observer assignment. You have to be able to watch what you are, you know, choosing to believe.
So we're looking at, like you were talking about with the hate thing, we're looking at the content.
The content.
Of the thought.
Yeah, that you're believing a fear thought, you're believing a hate thought, you're believing a self-hatred thought, an unworthiness thought. But notice that you're doing it. You're the one doing it without judgment. Mm-hmm. Right? That's a tough assignment, but my God, what a wonderful skill. Mm-hmm. Okay? All right, so let me go ahead and stop the recorder.